So, the second half of this chapter 6, this is a very essential chapter as it deals with what it means to practice devotional service, how to discharge devotional service. Here it is, it's all laid out in 64 principles. Krishna says beyond those 64 principles, there's nothing. In fact, he summarizes the 64 down into 15. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives a synopsis of these 64 and breaks it down into 15. So, we can just do a quick review. We did the 10 beads and the 10 bones. We didn't even finish the 10 bones, right? We just did part of the 10 bones, right?
Yeah.
The first 10 are things that one should do, the next 10 are things that one should avoid. And the next 44 are the general activities that the world comes in contact with. So we were just going through each one and explaining them. I guess, is there any questions on the first 10? What are the 10? The principal ones are accepting the shelter of the bona fide mission, and the spiritual master, becoming initiated, and learning how to discharge devotional service, obeying his orders with faith and devotion, following in the footsteps of the previous acharya under his direction, and inquiring how to make advancement. And prepared to give up everything, living in a sacred place, accepting what's necessary and dealing with the material world only as much as necessary. Yeah. Observing fasting and ekadasi and worshipping trees like banyan tree, tulsi tree. These are the preliminary items for beginning devotional service. And then the next, any questions on those 10? In terms of any aspect of it?
A question about taking shelter of the spiritual master and the initiation. Is that in ISKCON we have the first initiation and second initiation, but I heard that the older times there was only second in first initiation was the Brahmana initiation. So my question is, accepting a shelter of a spiritual master for us is like the first initiation.
No, accepting shelter is just agreeing to work under the guidance. Prabhupada said this is the time where you choose someone to be your spiritual master, and you follow his instructions, and then he is duty bound to guide you along. Spiritual master is Krishna's representative, but before you can actually develop confidence that this person is the person that you want to surrender your life to, there is a time period wherein there is, Prabhupada said, mutual testing. That's the word he uses. That the spiritual master tests the sincerity and the seriousness of the disciple, eagerness, and the disciple sees if this spirit is the person he wants to take shelter of. And Prabhupada said, this is generally 1 year, of course, in ISKCON. Prabhupada did it when he first started for 6 months. So taking shelter is not any formal initiation. It's simply a commitment that one makes in terms of one's agreement that I'll work under your guidance because I'm inspired by you. And if I'm convinced after a year, then I can go ahead. Remember, there's times where one changes, decides not to take shelter of that spiritual master and looks for someone else. But one can abuse this process by just going from guru to guru and never really taking, you know, what we say, serious shelter. You know, if one is not convinced, then one should try to become convinced. That's the idea. What will it take for you to be convinced? What are you looking for? And a disciple should know two things: what it means to be a disciple, and what it means, what is the qualification of a bona fide spiritual master. Fortunately, Srila Prabhupada has written a lot on this. And it's been compiled in one book called Spiritual Master and Disciple. Have you seen it?
Yes.
No? Oh, it's a good book. I could give you that book. I have an extra copy. You can read it. I give it out regularly to aspiring disciples. And you can study it, read it, and then everything is there. It's divided into categories and topics. And all your questions will be answered. Everything will be clear. So, if one is convinced, like, one may not necessarily take a spiritual master who is in their area. You know, one of the things that we sometimes get involved in. Generally, it's not wrong, but it's just that it's not an absolute principle that you have to take a guru in the area you're serving. You may take someone who is not in your area, but generally, you develop a relationship with the person in your area. So, based on that, there is some, you know, connection. But that's not a principle at all. It just happens to be convenient, and it also happens to be not only convenient, but it also happens to be an opportunity to, know someone where other situations, you can only know someone through their tapes, generally, because they're always traveling. But the idea of your question comes back to the principle that is a testing field. You test the guru tests you. Gurus cannot accept insincere or, what we say, unqualified disciples, and disciples should make sure that this is the person you're going to surrender to. Once you make the initiation, that can't change. Cannot give up your spiritual master. Unless he's fallen. If he's fallen, then that's another thing. But if he's still in good standing, one must continue. Because people take a spiritual master for the wrong reasons. Sometimes they take a spiritual master because they see something in them that they lack. And they project that in them. This is a quality that I like, and this is a characteristic that I would like to have. So they kind of resonate. Women have a tendency to do that. They see spiritual masters as their husbands. In fact, they all do that. Not all do that. But a man should be more intelligent and see that what is the qualification? Tasmat guru prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttama sabde parecha na nishnatma vam upasraya svayam. Another canto. That a spiritual master must come in line of the cyclic succession, and he must know the shastras and be able to defeat all opposing opinions. In other words, you should be well versed in the scriptures. That's one of the main principles. So, therefore, knowing a spiritual master means knowing what is the qualification of the spiritual master. Now, somebody may attract you on a personal level, but we have what is called personality cults, and they have a tendency to develop. Once that happens, that's bad news. One gets attached to his personality, not so much what he represents or what he's saying. And sometimes when the guru falls down or goes away, his disciples follow him anyway, even though he's fallen. It's happened in this time. When he died, still happening today. So one should know the qualifications, and of course the guru knows the qualifications of the disciple, and he should test him. Not that he should accept anyone. He should be kind and allow anyone to take shelter, but then he must bring that person up to a level of qualification? Either directly or through someone who's his representative? Okay?
Yes. It said that the Guru is one, because it's representing the absolute truth. You mentioned that sometimes the disciples, they want to accept the spiritual master because of the personality of the. They are more attracted to the aspect of the personality of the Guru.
Yeah. What is than the principle. Guru means that person who represents the principle of surrender to Krishna. He teaches you how to surrender to Krishna. He's not, the Guru is not the body, the Guru is the principle of surrender to Krishna. And he must inspire you through his words and through his guidance to surrender to Krishna, to engage in devotional service, to purify your heart. And you also have to have that desire. I want to purify my heart, I want to surrender to Krishna. Okay? Mutual testing. First initiation comes after that. Temple initiation comes after that.
Before Srila Prabhupada, there was first and second initiation, or this is something that Srila Prabhupada introduced?
No, there was Brahminical initiation. One is called Harinam initiation, and one is called Brahminical initiation. On Harinam initiation, the Guru takes part of the karma. And Harinami takes, Brahminical, he takes the rest. And I can say that. I think in previous traditions there were both. I don't know exactly when it changed. I think Bhakti Siddhanta, you remember, Prabhupada never talks about two initiations. He always talks about getting initiated. I think Prabhupada adopted that process. But it's there. Yeah. Next set of instructions are giving up the company of non-devotees, not instructing persons who are not desirous, one who is not enthusiastic, one not to read many books, neglectful of ordinary dealings, under the spell of lamentation or jubilation, not disrespecting the demigods, giving out trouble to other living entities. Yeah, One should not disrespect the demigods. The demigods are chosen representatives of the Lord in order to carry on universal functions. They are also beings who can award material benedictions and can also help one in one's devotional service. Although we don't worship the demigods, we don't disrespect them either. We give them just like any other living being. In fact, they are respectable because they are higher than us. Sometimes this is mentioned because some people think that demigods are just materialistic people, but actually we're not materialistic. They can give material benefits, but we don't worship materialism. So one should not disrespect anybody. Surya, Chandra, Indra. Sometimes you hear stories about Indra, how he gets in trouble all the time. You know, still, we can't criticize him. We criticize Lord Brahma for somehow chasing after his daughter, Lord Shiva, for chasing after Mahir and Raju. But so they are alright, but they are teaching by example. So one should not somehow find fault with the demigods or disrespect them. Okay, any question on that one? One should not give unnecessary trouble to any living entity. That's a good point. Sometimes in our dealings we become very lax and very routine and very mechanical and very, and somewhat very familiar. We should always have a respectful and a devotional sentiment to everyone. One should not cause anyone any unnecessary trouble. That's self-explanatory. Either by three things, body, mind, and words. Whatever a devotee does, it's not a cause of hardship for anyone.
This is included when we are distributing books or doing preaching activities.
Mm-hmm.
Some people become disturbed.
Try not to, but sometimes there are people who are just naturally disturbed all the time. And you can't help. If you see someone who looks quite inimical and definitely not going to be a person to receive your book, don't try to disturb them. Just to try to conquer them. Look for the people who seem to be the most open, favorable. Pick up on the person's energy simply by seeing that. So, you know, sometimes we meet people like that, or sometimes they come our way and we're talking to them. So, always be respectful, always be at the same time clear on what you're offering. You know, it's not that. Now, if somebody doesn't want a book and you're forcing them, that may be unnecessary trouble. One should carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting of the holy name, the Lord who worships the deity in the temple. So, carefully avoid the various offenses. So, in chapter number 8, we'll get into, I think, the offenses to be avoided. Let's see. There's a whole list of offenses, and also the 10 offenses I think are also listed there also. At the end of the chapter. Yeah. So those are the offenses in the deity, offenses to the, and offenses in the holy name. So that will get to that. It's a lot there. Okay. One should be very intolerant towards the blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna or his devotees. So that means that being intolerant means that a devotee is very, when we say humble, tolerant for oneself. But when he sees another devotee being offended or the Lord being criticized or blasphemed, he becomes intolerant towards that person. So there's three things you have to do. If someone is blaspheming, you have to defeat them. If you can't defeat them, then you should cut out their tongue. And if you can't do that, then you have to leave. The Sanskrit says, not only cut out the tongue, it says kill them. It's mentioned. One cannot, one who is blaspheming the Lord or the devotee, after you defeat him, you have to defeat him, you have to give up your own life, give up your own life, and, or, what's the last one? You go away. So giving up your own life is not so recommended in this age, because you may be a Brahmin, so if you give up your own life, you'll be guilty of killing a Brahmin. So that's not a good thing. So we don't recommend that. Usually try to defeat them. If you can't defeat them, you just leave.
Okay.
But you can't just tolerate it. And it says to cut off your tongue, but that's what it means to defeat them. Generally by verbal argument. You have to stop them if you blaspheme. I mean, I've come in contact with that already. But sometimes just by becoming so angry, a person will just immediately stop. My mother, one time I was on book distribution, some stupid guy just started saying some stupid things about Prabhupada. I just became so angry that he just became fearful and so stopped. So you get like that, you just have to become, you can't tolerate that, you just can't, it's not, because to allow that to go on is worse than death. To allow someone to blaspheme or offend a devotee or the Lord, the devotee cannot. There's what is called the dovetailing of the anger propensity. We don't give up anger. Prabhupada says, Krodha Bhakta. Krodha Bhakta means, Krodha means anger. A bhakta's anger is devotional service. It becomes like fire when the Lord or when the Lord's devotee is offended or blasphemed. Doesn't tolerate it. Of course, in Kali Yuga, you have to be careful, because sometimes it gets you in trouble. And, Tirtha, that's why he's in jail. That's, you take that principle to the extreme. people in society don't understand that. But what he did was, he was doing it to protect the devotees. Somebody wanted to kill some devotees, so he killed the other guy. So he was acting, but still, you just can't do that in Western society. But from a religious principle, he wasn't wrong. This doesn't always resonate with Kali Yuga. Okay. Any questions about that? Of course, one has to be really careful how to temper that. Without following the mentioned 10 principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti or devotional service in practice. Although Srila Rupa Goswami mentions 20 items, all of them are very important. Out of the 20, the first three, namely accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him and serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. Okay, next one. The next important items are... Read the next one? Read the whole number one.
The next important items are as follows. One, one should decorate the body with tilak, which is the sign of the Vaishnavas. The idea is that as soon as a person sees these marks on the body of the Vaishnava, he will immediately remember Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that a Vaishnava is he who, when seen, reminds one of Krishna. Therefore, it is essential that a Vaishnava mark his body with tilak to remind others of Krishna.
Yeah, it's very important. Lord Chaitanya was very strict on it. He says if you don't have tilak on, your body is no better than a crematorium. entirely striped. He would sometimes send his devotees back immediately as soon as he saw them without tilak, immediately put on tilak. Very strict. So we keep tilak on. Sometimes devotees in our society think, well, you know, people in general, they don't understand, they get intimidated, or they make fun. You know, I don't want to cause any unnecessary disturbance. But I think if you're dressed in karmic clothes, you cannot wear tilak. If you're dressed in dhoti, then you should always wear tilak. So there is a thing called water tilak, when you can just put it on with water. That is a lot. Like some cases, if you're out and you're preaching and distributing books, and you're just dressed in regular clothes, then you may not want to wear tilak if it doesn't fit in with the rest of your attire. Now you can. But I think it's a matter of discretion what is best for preaching. It's only in the case of preaching now, and you know, not in the case of just going out. So you can use that principle, but generally, but always, if you're wearing dhoti, you should always put on tilak, even in the temple. Where's your tilak? It's gone.
Can't see it.
And put it on more than, I put mine on at least 2 or 3 times a day. Put it on in the morning, but that is, you know, so keep your teeth on top. That's very important. Do you have any teeth on here?
Upstairs.
I have some teeth.
Yeah, put it on.
This is the practical aspect.
Prabhupada, I've looked at them with very strict for devotees. I mean, if we're associating with devotees, we should always temple and always keep it out. Very well. We're following the principles. See, I should tell Yeshua that he's in Maya for not coming.
Okay.
Yeah, tell him. I told you that when you didn't come, right?
Yes, I remember.
No, second time you missed. Class is for everyone's benefit. I mean, he can go out and preach too, but I mean, it's 2 hours or 2 days a week. You should always make some time aside for this. Go ahead, I'll wait.
Yes.
Okay, so number 2, we can read again next one.
In marking such tilak, sometimes one may write Hare Krishna on the body.
Yeah. Now you see that sometimes, especially in warm climates, the body's body has different things on the body, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, or something Krishna conscious. Number 3, you want to read.
Can they say mark right with tilak?
You can write, yeah, Hare Krishna.
One should accept flowers and garlands that have been offered to the deities and the spiritual master and put them on one's body.
Okay, so that's a regulatory principle, and sometimes someone gives us a flower or a garland, we should accept them. Not that it's optional. It's actually one of the regulatory principles to accept garlands and flowers. In the morning we offer flowers. Twice in the morning or two. Number 4.
One should learn to dance before the deity.
So one should dance before the deity. Of course, sometimes we go a little too far, kind of crazy. But generally there's a style of dancing which is considered to be acceptable. Prabhupada talking Swami step. So that's a regular principle. One should dance before Tadini. Even if you just move your feet from side to side, that's fine. Something should be there. Number five.
One should learn to bow down immediately upon seeing the deity or the spiritual master.
Okay.
Have a question?
Yeah.
When the deities, when we are in the temple,
mm-hmm.
and the altar is open,
mm-hmm.
and if the spiritual master enters, or a Shiksha Guru, or Diksha, should we offer obeisances? Some devotees said that when the altar is open, we don't have to.
Well, there's an injunction, and then there's another injunction. And both apply. The one injunction is that one should never offer obeisances to anyone before the deity. That is the injunction. But in the case of one's spiritual master, because one's spiritual master is the representative of the Lord and is considered the most important aspect of the devotee's life, there is a principle where if the spiritual master walks in, one can offer obeisances to the spiritual master before the deity. And that does not break that relative principle. But if you don't do it, it's okay. If you do it, it's okay. If you don't do it because you want to follow that person. But the thing is, if just like if some senior devotee walks in, it's not necessarily, it can be offensive if you offer some respect to that senior devotee who's not your spiritual master. There's this, no book?
No English. I can't read English.
And you can understand, but can't read.
I can understand what you say, something, but I can't read.
Oh, because we're reading the regulative principles.
Oh.
Okay.
My husband has any Spanish, I read it.
Okay. So that was a discussion problem, said it's okay, but not for any senior devotee. Only one spiritual master. Okay. Good. Number six.
As soon as one visits a temple of Lord Krishna, one must stand up.
Yeah, that's when the deity. When the curtain is open, one must rise. And when one sees the deity, one must stand up. Not that we sit in front of the deity. Yes, generally in India, sometimes people just come to the temple and sit there. One has to stand up in front of the deity and bow down. One may sit after doing that, but still one must greet the Lord from the standing position.
And then you can sit, you can chapa.
Just like we're sitting down and the curtain's open. We stand up. Because the curtain's open.
But when Srimad Bhagavatam class is going on, we don't do that.
Generally not, because Srimad Bhagavatam is, even if you're taking prasadam, if you're engaged in it, these acts, it's okay. But you know, sometimes when the curtain's open, we pay our obeisances, even senior devotees, they do what they do. Sometimes you see the lecturer who does that. Or he'll sometimes touch his head to the floor. Something. There should be some acknowledgement of the appearance of the Lord. Not that you just, everything just goes on just like nothing happened.
Yeah. That's not exactly Krishna conscious. It's kind of disrespect. Next one.
When the deity is being born or a stroll in the street, a devotee should immediately follow the procession. In this connection, it may be noted that in India, especially in Vishnu temples, the system is that apart from the big deity who is permanently situated in the main area of the temple, there is a set of smaller deities which are taken in procession in the evening. In some temples, it is a custom to hold a big procession in the evening with a band playing and a nice big umbrella over the deities, who sit on decorated thrones on the cart or palanquin, which is carried by devotees. The deities come out onto the street and travel in the neighborhood, while the people of the neighborhood come out to offer prasad. The residents of the neighborhood all follow the procession, so it is a very nice scene. When the deity is coming out, the servitors in the temple put forward the daily accounts before them. So much was the collection, so much was the expenditure. The whole idea is that the deity is considered to be the proprietor of the whole establishment. And all the priests and other people taking care of the temple are considered to be the servants of the deity. This system is very, very old and it still follows. So, therefore, it is mentioned here that when the deity is in on stroll, the people should follow behind.
Okay. So, generally in the West, we don't do that. But in India, that's correct. That's a regular thing. In some temples here, we only time the deities come out is when they go for Rathi Yatra and Ashtadana. But generally, this is followed only by temples in the West, East area. But the point is the same. If the deity is the provider of the whole establishment, and everyone is accountable for the deity. Could be. The deity owns everything, and the deity must be considered, the ultimate principle in everything we do. Okay. Self-explanatory. Okay. Number 8.
A devotee must visit a Vishnu temple at least once or twice every day, morning and evening. In Vrindavan, this system is followed very strictly. All the devotees in town go every morning and evening to visit different temples. Therefore, during these times, there are considerable crowds all over the city. There are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan city. Of course, it is not possible to visit all of the temples, but there are at least one dozen very big and important temples which were started by the Goswamis and which should be visited.
Uh-huh. So what are those temples? Who knows? There's actually 7 prominent temples. What's one of them? You know the 7 prominent temples of Vrindavan?
Mm-hmm.
Radha Dhamma.
Radha Dhamma is 1.
Govindaji.
Radha Govindaji is 2.
Madan
Mohan is 3. Radha Gopinath, Radha Shamsundar, 4 and 5, Radha Raman, 6, and what's the last one? Radha Gokulananda. That's the 7 major temples in Vrindavan.
What was the first one?
Radha Govinda Gopina Madanda Three principal deities are Govindaji, Madan Mohan, and Gopina. These are the three principal animals. Madan Mohan represents the deity who brings you. Govindaji means the one who engages you. And Gopinath is the one who takes you to the ultimate goal. Sambandhan, Abhideya, Fellowship. Okay. Which one are we at? There's about 5,000 temples. There's at least one dozen very big and important temples. But there's about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan. Okay. So, in practical things, we come to the temple here.
That's good.
Number 10, is it?
No, 9. Mm-hmm. One must circumambulate the temple building at least 3 times. In every temple there is an arrangement to go around the temple at least 3 times. Some devotees go around more than 3 times, 10 times, 15 times according to their vows. The Goswamis used to circumambulate Govardhan Hill.
What's circumambulate?
Circumambulate, yeah.
Circumambulate means going around. So, let's circulate the whole Vrindavan area. So this circumambulate, many temples have what we say a Parikram path around the devas, even Western temples, even non-meters a path around the devas. Vrindavan is a path around the devas. So, what you do is you walk around, or in the case of where there's no path, you walk around the whole temple, go outside. But here you can do the alleyways and also the walking. But this is a regulative principle. We just don't have it here in Chicago because of the atmosphere. He says if you go around 3 times, what does it say? What is it equivalent to?
According to your vows.
Yes, but if one circumambulates the deities 3 times, it's like traveling throughout the universe. Traveling throughout the whole universe.
So, is there anything we can do here in this temple?
This is
more.
Around the temple. Sometimes we turn around in Kayu.
Walk around the temple, outside. Is there a place to go around?
Yeah,
yeah.
No, we have to go from the street, at least.
Where?
We are circumambulating the whole building.
This side over here you can't go, because there's people in the orange, right?
Yes.
You can join the
wall.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find.
Not so good here in Chicago, unfortunately. But it says that I know there's a counter principle that if you do that, it's equal to doing that without what it was. But we can do it in the temple without that.
What about doing it around Prabhupada?
Mm-hmm.
What about doing it around Prabhupada?
That's nice. Anytime you go around someone or something, that means that's a way of worship. Go around the person, or you go around the Lord, like that's a way of worship. Should be done with respect, though. Okay, and Govardhan Hill. This is we can go to Vrindavan and go around Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is 14 miles around. It's not so far. 23.5 kilometers. Okay, number 10.
One must worship the deity in the temple according to the regulative principles. offering arati and prasada, decorating the deity, etc. These things must be observed regularly.
Okay. Offering arati and offering prasada. If one sees the arati and accepts prasada, that's what it is. One must worship the deity according to the letter. And we'll get to that later, the principles for deity worship. Okay, number 11.
One must render personal service to the deities.
Well, one of the ways to, what's called padasevanam, one of the ways to render personal service is to offer some gift to the deities. You can do them. Offer some prayers to the deities, you can do that. Offer, what else? What's another way of personal service?
Cooking?
Yeah, of course, cooking, cleaning. These are all forms of personal service. If one goes to observe the festivals, that's also personal service. Okay, number 12.
One must sing.
Yeah, not that we just stand there. Have to sing. Okay, that's pretty easy. One must
perform sankirtan.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. Next one.
One must chant.
One must chant, okay.
Chan refer to japa?
Chanting refers in this case to japa, yes. Because singing is there, chanting is there.
One must offer prayers.
So there's different kinds of prayers. The next one kind of puts everything in perspective. One must recite notable prayers. That means that in the scriptures there's also recommended prayers that we chant. Om Jnana Timirandasya Ginantina Samakaya Vande Ham Shiguro Shiyutapada Kamaram Shiguru Vaishnavamsya. These are recommended prayers that we can say every day. Or we can take prayers, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers from Srimad Bhagavatam. These prayers are very deep with devotion and great philosophical meaning. And by reciting the prayers of the great souls, we actually enter into that mood of devotion. Helps us. Prayers by Lord Shiva, prayers by Lord Brahma, prayers by the Pachetas, prayers by Dhruva Maharaj, prayers by the prayers by Queen Kunti, right? Then, yeah. One of the most important set of prayers in the Bible, though. And also prayers by the personified Vedas, which is a very long section in the Bible, though. At the very end of the 10th chapter, all series of prayers. So these are all wonderful ways to express devotion. Prayer is so powerful. So one can offer individual prayers, or one should offer notable prayers and individual prayers. So individual prayers are, you know, we're offering the Mahom Vishnu Bhada, that's a prayer. We're also offering the prayers during our day-to-day chanting. And we can also offer prayers coming from our own heart, as long as they're not prayers based on, you know, anything self-centered. We should always pray for devotional service or purification of the heart or ability to chant, ability to understand. And we pray for something that will increase our devotion or increase our service.
Okay. Okay, so what's the next one? Any questions so far?
One must taste Mahaprasad, food from the very place offered before the deities.
That's an easy one. That's not a hard one. No one has trouble with that one. Okay.
One must drink chana.
What's the difference between Mahaprasad and Prasad?
Mahaprasad is offered to the altar.
That means
it is more powerful
than the Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little more powerful. Okay.
One must drink chant to break the water from the bathing of the deities, which is offered to guests.
So that water cuts the body of the Lord and is offered to everyone. The one must take that daily. That's a very Charitamrita is very powerful. Prabhupada, one time when a girl was sick, she couldn't get well. Prabhupada told her just to live on Charitamrita. She was taking Charitamrita and she got well. Charitamrita is very powerful. Number 19.
One must smell the incense and flowers offered to the deity.
Ah. That way, though. 20.
One must touch the lotus feet of the deity.
Now, in some temples, and we also have it here, we have that thing with the deity's feet, and the pujari comes and puts it on your head. That should be done every day, actually. We don't do that every day. Pujari should come out and get that at a time when there's many people in the temple. During the most crowded times, that should be done. And people get the mercy of the deities. Because getting that on your head is like getting the deities, it's the same thing as getting the deities' feet on your head. It's not different. It's not practical to go up to the altar and put your head on the deity's feet or touch the deity's feet. But we can do this. And it's done in Mayapur every day. You get Lord Nisringadeva's feet on your head every day in Mayapur.
In LA, they are doing every day.
Yeah, we should do it. Speak up. Tell them we should do it. Mm. It's important. And that's number 21.
One must see the deity with great devotion.
Yeah, not that. Okay, there he is again, looking at him. Nothing. When you see the deity, you see with devotion. See with the eyes of devotion, the eyes of service, the eyes of awe and reverence.
The ornaments, the hair,
everything? Yeah, when we take darshan, we look at the feet, and we raise our eyes up to the face, and then we bring down, and then we go, and then we take our faces. When the curtain's open, you do that. First you greet the deity, and you put your eyes on his feet, and you look to his face, and down, and you feel those. Mm-hmm. Not that you just, like you're diving into the water. Not the way it works. Even senior devotees do that, but it's not correct. When the curtain's open, you greet the deity, and then you pay your obeisances. That should be done with devotion. The Prabhupada said three things. When you're standing before the deity, you say three things. First, you glorify the deity's qualities. You may think of something in your mind of his glories, like his pastimes, or his, you may even appreciate his quality of dress and his ornamentation to glorify the Lord. Or you can sing the prayers that are being sung, in the music. That's glorification. Then you also, at the same time, you also explain to the Lord how fallen you are and how much you're dependent on His mercy. And the last one is your free Lord, give me some service. So these is how the Siddha Devas are, that we just stare into space, you know, with a blank mind or with you know, seeing other things. There always should be some strong mental appreciation, devotion like that. It's not. Krishna comes in the form of a deity. So that's Krishna. He's appeared. There he is. So we have to see what and think in the devotional way. And by doing that, we develop devotion. Some people say mistakenly that devotion should come naturally. It will come naturally if you practice the principles. So therefore, we should always act according to the principles, even though we may not feel like it. Oh, here he is. Minus, give you a minus D. What happened?
Sorry, Maharaj, I was on. Actually, I was already at IIT. I was just reading some books. Those two guys from your seminar, that when you get there 2 weeks ago, they came around.
So we're going through the regulative principles in chapter 6. We're on number. We're just listing them and then discussing the regulative principles. So I'm just saying a few words about each one of them. So what was the last one?
22. Next.
When one must see the deity with great devotion, again, we see the deity with devotion and not simply with a blank mind or with some kind of materialistic thought process. Okay? Any questions? Number 22. Anyone can read.
One must offer artic at different times.
So we offer artic to the deities. So that's for the temple. And that's really the principle for deity worship. The deity gets how many artics a day? Six RTs. Each have a different name. Okay, number 23.
One must hear about the Lord and His pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar books.
Yeah. So this is important. This process of hearing is the basis of all Krishna consciousness. The pastimes of the Lord are the pinnacle of all hearing. It is, absorbs our mind in both the philosophy and in the lila. So Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and similar books, Prabhupada said. These are foundational, and these are what we want to hear as much as possible. Any questions about that one? Bhaktisiddhanta speaks about this process of hearing very, what we say, thoroughly, as he explains the whole thing, that everything is situated on the process of hearing. We have to regularly hear. Without regularly hearing, we will not be able to become inspired in service. Through hearing, we become inspired in our service. Hearing and chanting, of course, both. But hearing is the foundation. Well, if you what will you chant if you don't hear? How will you, what will you repeat if you don't hear? Hearing is foundational, and then by chanting we remember like that. So hearing is very good. Krishna says in Gita, the 7th chapter, verse 1, you can know me simply by hearing about me. Hearing about me from me and from great souls. So this process of hearing is really everything. All the 9 processes of devotional service really evolve around the process of hearing. Hearing is the basis. And how much should we hear? Let's put it this way, we don't hear enough. So whatever we're hearing is not enough. We should be hearing all the time. 24 hours a day hearing. Hearing purifies the heart, clears the mind, and awakens one's devotion and enthusiasm to serve, and it also blocks other forms of mental static and sound vibrations. So keep the mind connected to the process of hearing. And fortunately, technology has helped us in that regard. So many forms of, you know, gadgets where we can plug into some kind of sound vibration. And it's being done in a materialistic way, but Papa said, we are like the snake and the mouse. The mouse makes a hole and he lives in it, and the snake comes and eats the mouse and lives in the hole. We're like the snake. They produce it and we use it to destroy them. Yeah, we use technology in the other way. We use it to spread Krishna consciousness and destroy their whole useless civilization. We're not going to produce it ourselves. We're not going to worry about doing all this stuff. Let them do it, and we just take it and defeat them. Snake and a mouse. Right? They make rock and roll, we'll make Krishna conscious rock and roll. So, just Krishna is everything. That's all. Okay, so, what's the next one? Number 24.
One must pray to the deity for his mercy.
Okay. That's quite easy. So, mercy is the process. Well, this process is a process of mercy. So one of the regular principles is praying to the deity for mercy. Please, my dear Lord, give me your mercy. And guess what? When you pray like that, guess what happens? You get the mercy. And if you don't pray, guess what happens? You don't get the mercy.
I have a question about that. Like, when we are praying for the mercy, so I'm a conditioned soul, you know, so what I'm praying.
The Prabhupada said, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, wherever there's a prayer, there's a request for a benediction. But what is the nature of any prayer? There's always some request. So what is the request that fits within the line of our devotional benefit? We have to pray like that. Like, one of the things we can pray is, before you chant japa, pray for the mercy of the Lord to come in the form of japa. Pray to Lord Chaitanya, pray to your spiritual master, pray to Prabhupada. Pray to the holy name directly and say, please allow me to chant your name. And guess what? You'll find that your rounds are better. The Lord will he's waiting, because the problem with the conditioned soul is things, I can do it. I know how to do it. But you may know how to do it, but you can't do it without His mercy. So, to get off that platform of being self, you know, reliant, and being reliant on Krishna, therefore we have to pray for whatever we do. Great souls are always praying. They don't stop praying. They always pray for the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of their spiritual master, the mercy of the Vaishnavas. It's a process of getting your mercy and believing. And when you do that, you'll see there's a big difference in your spiritual life. If you just try to do things, that's okay, but it's not really where our success is, just by trying to do things. You have to pray. Pray if you give a class. Every one of you will give a class someday. So the first class you give up here, you'll be a bike.
Oh, Krishna, save me!
you know, and you don't know what to say, so you get nervous and we were talking about this in one of my last trips. This one devotee gave, he had this, he had one of these hats on like you, and he had a scarf like this. He was giving a class. So what he had Prabhupada's tape like plugged into his ears. He would hit the button and the Prabhupada would say something, and then he would click it off and then he would say it. And then he would turn the button on again and say, hear another line or two, and then he would say that. Everybody's saying, wow, what a great class he's got. He was just listening to Prabhupada. But I mean, that was great. But, you know, sometimes we can't do that. So the idea is, all right, I don't have any qualifications. Let me pray and see what works. Let me pray. And if your prayer is pure, you'd be surprised what happens. Any prayer is effective, but when a prayer is pure, then the results are tremendous. Tremendous results. We have pure prayer. Pure prayer is that we want to please the Lord and we want to please the devotees and spread Krishna consciousness. That's our main desire. If that's actually our desire, then Krishna will give his mercy through his holy name to his devotees. Prayer. So Śrīla Mahārāja writes a lot about prayer. He writes a lot of many books about prayer, importance of prayer.
Vandanam.
Vandanam. Another book that first came out many years ago.
Prayer of the Mahajan. Prayer of the Mahajan.
It was about Christian prayers, I think it was. It was a yellow covered book. He drew some features with his free hand on the cover. Some people criticized it, said it was too Christian, but it was good. Yeah, prayer. Read his books about prayer. They're very good. Prayer, prayer, prayer. You can pray for everything.
Are you finding, especially like ISKCON, Hare Krishna, you find the devotees like when you chant? But we don't pray. I mean, you see that a lot. Like, most of the
time,
it's
like,
we don't pray.
Chanting means prayer. The same thing. So,
but they make, like, distinctive, like, one should chant, one should pray also, like, and that's
where it's
supposed
to be. It's also mentioned in one of the biblical principles here. If you look at number 14,
right,
one must chant. Number 15 is... So in one sense they're different, but in another sense they're not. There is a distinction. Of course, one of the nine processes of devotional service is? And what's another one? Yeah. So they're separate.
What's one can chant in the mood of prayer? When he's chanting?
That's real chanting.
Even though one is chanting in the mood of prayer, which is the standard, but still prayer is separate by something, you should also be praying. It says that one should recite notable prayers and one should recite his own prayers also.
Yeah.
So it's still like separate also. So my question is like in regards to that aspect of our devotional life. I mean, we can chant, but also how intensely should we be on this side, like really like trying to offer prayers, like someone sending Bhakti Chaitanya's prayers through email. Now he actually wrote prayers, very beautiful prayers, like something completely separate from this chanting.
Yeah.
So how important, like, aspect of our life? Like, should we, like, dedicate time, especially, like...
It's one of the nine processes. One can perform all the nine processes. And all the nine processes generally included within the process of Bhakti. But the thing is, you're asking how much? Well, that's individual. There's a regulative principle that says that you should do something. But some people are, other people are different. Some people like to serve. Some people like to chant. Some people like to read. Some people like to offer prayers like that. Some people like to just hear. They may not say anything, but they hear. So all these processes are part of the mind. So one may emphasize one or the other. So for some people, prayer may be a regular thing. For others, it may be something just comes up occasionally. So there could be a difference. I mean, there is. There's a notable difference. But if you find devotion, really, prayer is a way to commune with the Lord. So through prayer, we're actually communing with the Lord. Chanting is a way to commune with the Lord. But sometimes what happens in our chanting, we have a tendency to do it as a, what we say, a service, and not as a prayer. If we're not chanting in a prayerful mood, then we're really not chanting in the proper mood. Because chanting is a prayer. What is that prayer? Please, my Lord, engage me in your devotional service.
Like you said before, when we are praying, we always have a request to Krishna.
Yeah.
It's okay always we request a request to Krishna. We have to give something. A cambio, como se dice? ¿Cómo sale?
In exchange of.
Sometimes I feel bad, like asking Krishna, please give me this or do this or do that. I have to do something.
Yeah, the best prayer is more or less the prayer for a service. We ask for the Lord for service, that's the best prayer.
Yeah,
pray for service. Yeah. We can ask for those qualities that make our service pleasing to the Lord. In other words, we shouldn't ask anything for ourselves. We should ask for something that helps us in our service to the Lord, helps us in our process of becoming purified. You know, like if you're going out on sankirtan, yes, you can pray. Pray that, please, Lord, send me some people to take these books.
Well, he's crying, please, Lord, send me the big donations.
You might get the big donations, and you may not become Krishna Dhamma. I remember we used to go out in Sankirtan, we used to work all weekend, at the end of the weekend, we collect all this money. But we were just totally destroyed spiritually. We just wanted to die. We had no enthusiasm. We were drained of all our energy. But we had a lot of money. But that was a compromise. That means being attached to the fruits rather than being attached to the service.
I had that experience in Miami. Sometimes we were in there outside for hours and we can only distribute two books or four books.
Mm.
But we got a big collect. But that was the worst marathon that I ever did. I felt so empty all time because people they didn't want the book, but they give the donation. But it was kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, the book is actually, I mean, if they give some donation, that's good. It's Krishna conscious, but still, the idea is to get the books out. Something like that. As we purify our heart, our prayers become less selfish and more in line with Krishna consciousness. please, Lord, don't let anybody see what a fool I am. You know I'm a fool, and I know I'm a fool, but don't let anybody else see it. That's a good prayer. I like that. There's some good stories about prayers too. I was just listening. You know, Ramanujacharya, Koresh, he sacrificed his eyes to save Ramanujacharya's life. Mm. He was blinded. And Ramanujacharya, when he saw that, he was really, he was so heartbroken, so touched by the devotion of Koresh, that he sent Koresh into the temple to ask the deity for his eyes back. Koresh just sat in front of the deities and didn't say anything. The Lord said, you came here to ask me something? He said, yes, what is it? He simply asked for liberation for the person who tortured him. And then the deity said, you sure? And then he put him in hellish burst life after life. He said, no, please give him liberation, bring him to Vaikuntha. The Lord said, all right, whatever you request. He went back, he still didn't have his eyes. Ramanujacharya said, did you ask the deity? Didn't say anything. He sent him back again, this time asked him. Time he asked for liberation for the other person, the king. First he asked for the minister, then he asked for the king. And there were so many things. He never asked for his eyes back. Finally he told the Lord, I don't want any eyes to see anything in this world. If you want to give me any kind of vision, you give me divine vision. So the Lord actually gave him eyes where he could only see the Lord internally. And then he came back to Ramanujacharya, said the Lord, asked the Lord, he said, yes. Well, I see you're still blind. No, I can see spiritually. Okay, then tell me what's the deity wearing. And he was able to describe exactly what the deity looked like. His ornaments, his garlands, his clothes, everything, his crown. He didn't want to see anything, you know. Ramanujacharya said, if you simply ask long enough, we'll give you the design for your eyes back. Or Bhagavaj. He was happy that, you know, that he was able to offer some service. So generally this is very high, but a pure devotee doesn't want anything from themselves. They want to serve, they want to please the Lord, and they want to make others Krishna. So as we purify our consciousness, we can offer more and more pure prayers. But we should see, even Kierkegaard, the great Russian literary philosopher, he said that the prayer that contends is the best prayer. Contends means the prayer that listens. You pray to hear the voice of the Lord. I'm praying to hear my Lord. Let me pray so I can hear your voice. What is it you want from me? That is my prayer. That prayer that is trying to hear Krishna. So, that's a pure prayer. The whole science of prayer is very deep. If you read Satsrupa Maharaj's book, you'll find a lot in it. There's so many kinds of prayers. There's so many great souls offering prayers. Okay, let's continue. We're going to try and finish this chapter. Okay. Number 25.
Marshall, remember the deity.
Okay, so we go take darshan in the morning. We put the deity's picture in our mind, as I mentioned, and we try to remember the deity throughout the day. Continue.
One should meditate upon the deity.
Means we can sit in front of the deity and simply meditate upon it. That is also considered to be devotion. It's called Shantaras. And there's no practical service, but there is appreciation, meditation, and the Buddha's. Okay?
One should render some voluntary service.
Yeah. Not that I just do my duty, but every once in a while one should also offer some service. Voluntarily. 28.
One should think of the Lord as one's friend.
Lord Krishna says that in Gita, that I am the friend, Suvidam Sahudehinam, I am the friend of all living beings. So that means one should think of the Lord as one's friend, that is, he is always going to do what's best for me. A friend is one who does the best for his friend. Krishna is a friend. Okay.
One should offer everything to the Lord.
Actually, this one about thinking the Lord as a friend, that's one of the nine crosses, right? Sakya. That's actually on the spontaneous platform. There are nine processes. The first seven are under what is called Vaidhi Bhakti, and the last two, becoming friend with the Lord and offering everything to the Lord, is on the platform of Raghavendra Bhakti. But we can practice these things anyway from the platform. Yeah.
What should offer everything to the Lord means even the bad qualities also?
No.
I mean,
you should ask him to get rid of your bad qualities.
I mean, if we should offer everything, we should offer everything.
Even the garbage. We don't want to offer garbage to Krishna. We should pray to Krishna to help us overcome these bad qualities. You should offer it to him. Here, Krishna, take a little, envy. Take a little anger. Take a little.
I was thinking that offer to the Lord, take it out.
Yeah, that's not offering it. That's asking for purification. Offering means you give something. Okay. I should offer everything to the Lord. Who is the person who personified that one?
Bali.
He offered everything to the Lord and became famous as the person who surrendered everything. Here's another one.
One should offer a favorite article such as food or a garment.
Yeah. If you like a particular kind of food, you can offer to Krishna, or you can offer Krishna a garment like that. You can do that. If you like to eat pizza, you can offer to Krishna. Okay.
One should take all kinds of risk and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit.
Okay. Any questions of that?
If that's for Krishna's benefit.
Yeah, not for your benefit. One should take risks and perform endeavors for Krishna's benefit. That means you may have to take a risk and have to do a difficult service. And something you don't want to do, or something that's difficult. But the question came up, should we personally try to look for risks and endeavors? No, don't worry about that. Don't try to put yourself in a situation where you're looking for some real difficult things to offer. Just follow the day-to-day activities, and Krishna will do that. I mean, there's always difficult things that come up in our service. We don't have to avoid them, nor do we have to trying to find things that are difficult. You may want to do something, if you know Krishna likes a particular service, like Prabhupada was told by his spiritual master to distribute books. So in order to do that, he had to take all kinds of risks. So there may be risks in a particular service. Risks in preaching, you have to travel. You have these risks in staying in the temple. Yes, because we have to associate with devotees so closely, and we have to learn how to associate. So there's risks in everything. Risk living in the ashram because somebody might steal your tape recorder or cell phone or something. So there's always a risk. Don't have to look for them. Because tomorrow Krishna Goswami asked that problem. Well, should we try to look for, you know, difficulties? No problem, so they will come. Don't try to avoid them.
One question I have. It's interesting to perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. But philosophically, we know that how can you benefit Krishna? The Supreme Personality of God is everything we're doing for our own purification, our own benefit, actually.
Yeah, but that's not what I mean. Krishna has certain desires he wants us to do it for Krishna's benefit. What is Krishna's benefit? Krishna's benefit is what the spiritual master gives you. If Krishna comes in the morning to give his darshan and you're not there, then you're not thinking of Krishna's benefit. Krishna likes to see his devotees. If they don't show up, then you're not trying to do anything for Krishna's benefit. Krishna's benefit is that Krishna likes to see devotees cooperate and develop real Krishna conscious relationships. If we don't want to make endeavor to do that, then you don't care about Krishna's benefit. Krishna's a person. He's pleased by certain things and he's not pleased by certain things. He's accepting our service. It's not that, you know, he doesn't need it, but still, he likes it. You know, it's not that if we don't give our love, he becomes any less, and if we give our love, he becomes any more. Our love is not going to make him greater or any lesser. But the principle of devotion and the principle of relationship is to exchange love for Krishna. So he likes that. He enjoys that. If you don't love your husband or your wife, then there's a loss in the relationship. If you don't love Krishna, then there's a loss in that relationship. Although Krishna doesn't need it, still there's a loss of that relationship. So everything should be done for Krishna's benefit. Krishna likes certain things. And really, what he likes is when the devotee sacrifices his benefit for Krishna's benefit. We may not like to do things, but Krishna wants us to do it. A spiritual master wants us to do it because spiritual masters represent Krishna. So we do it. It's not that Krishna is any less or any more, but that is what is called loving relationships. Okay? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Maybe?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay. I want you to understand things, so that's the idea. Number 32. Let's go a little faster now.
In every condition, one should be surrender soul.
Okay. Not just part time, but all the time.
One should pour water on the postage tree.
You do that every day, that's important. Hmm. 34.
One should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and similar details.
Yeah. So every day we do that. 35.
One should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka.
Or the temple, which is also considered sacred place.
One should offer service to Vaishnavas, devotees.
Okay. Not that I got my service and you got your service and we don't serve each other. No. Serving the Vaishnavas is very important.
One should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means.
Yeah. You know, if you go beyond your means, then you might be over-endeavored, or you may not be able to serve nicely. What's an example for that? In other words, I want to build a temple for Krishna, but I don't have the means to. So if you try to go out and do that, and you may give up your practice, and then you cannot accomplish your goal. So it's too difficult. It's too much endeavor to acquire the means for a particular service, and one may just stick to whatever service you're doing. In other words, one should not try to perform great spiritual feats if one doesn't have the means to do it. Sometimes one wants to do something great, but it's not Krishna's desire. It's just simply one wants to just satisfy their own thought. That's why we have the spiritual master. Helps us to understand things. Continue.
In the month of Kartika, October and November, one should make arrangements for special service.
Okay. We'll just read them if there's any questions and we'll comment.
During your march to me, the time of Krishna's appearance in this world, I should observe a special service.
Okay. One should do whatever is done with great care and devotion for the deity.
One should relish the pleasure of Bhagavata, reading among devotees and not among outsiders.
Okay, we should read Bhagavata among devotees. Relish it.
One should associate with devotees who are considered more advanced.
That's a very important thing, because by associating with advanced devotees, one becomes advanced.
One should chant the holy name of the Lord.
Okay.
One should be in the jurisdiction of Madhura.
Krishna's birthplace. So some of these regulative principles are not applicable to America, but some are only applicable to India. Okay, now finish up.
Now the total regulative principles come to an aggregate of 64 items. As we have mentioned, the first are the primary 10 regulative principles, then come the secondary 10 regulative principles. And added to these are 44 other activities. So altogether, there are 64 items for discharge and regulative practice of devotional service. Out of these 64 items, 5 items, namely, worshipping the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating among the devotees, Sankirtan, and living in Mathura, are very important. The 64 items of devotional service should include all of our activities of body, mind, and speech as stated in the beginning. The relative principle of devotional service enjoins that all of our senses must be employed in the service of the Lord. Exactly how they can be thus employed is described in the above 64 items. Nama Srila Rupa Goswami will give evidence from different scriptures supporting the authenticity of many of these points.
Okay. That's the summation of these. So this is how to discharge devotional service. Essentially, the Prabhupada said three things: chant the holy name, follow the regulative principles, and avoid offenses. If you do these three things, your spiritual life is guaranteed to be very, what we say, straight, progressive, continuous, unimpeded.
chant the holy name, follow the 64 regular principles, and avoid the offenses. The offenses, we'll get to that in the chapter later. Okay. Any final questions before I give the questions for homework assignment? This is interesting. This is 64. Again, I'll give you a little hint. If you turn to Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, nineteenth chapter, verses 20 through 24, Krishna summarizes the 64 principles into 15. He summarized these. Of course, we should know all the time, but he's done a summation in the Bhagavatam. He's condensed them down to 15. And if you follow both 15, because some of them don't apply, because some of them apply only if it's in the, like following the procession of the deity like that. Okay, try to learn these regular principles. Try to practice them. So now I will give you the questions for the next. I'm going to try and finish all 19 chapters in a couple of months. We'll see what happens, how much we can do. Chapter 6, ready? Question number 1. What are the primary 10 regulative principles of devotional service? Number 2. What are the secondary 10 regulative principles? Number 3. What are the 44 other items of devotional service? Good question. Number 4. Explain the difference between the basic principles and the details. Three most important items of the 64 principles of devotional service. What are the five very important items of the 64 principles of devotional service? Explain how the 64 items of devotional principles can help them attain pure devotional service. That's the last question. Yeah. Explain how the 64 items of devotional principles can help one attain pure devotional service.
What's the difference between questions 5 and 6?
5 and 6?
What are the three most important items of devotional services? 5 and 6, or what are the five very important items?
Yeah.
Just most important, very important?
Yeah, they're listed in separately in the chapter. You got them tonight. You'll see it. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you all for coming. You can come more. Oh, yeah. Good. Nectar devotion is the basis, it's the foundation for understanding. Bhakti is a science, and it's the science of awakening one's natural love for Krishna. And the 64 principles are the understanding of how to perform that science correctly. So some principles are easily understood and some need to be explained like that. But basically everything is included in the 64 principles.
Mm-hmm.